All right, guys, you are Locked On Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today I am joined by Mark Schofield of Touchdown Wire to do our in-depth breakdown of North Dakota State quarterback Trey Lance.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman. Been covering the Falcons for many years, formerly at FalcFans.com, RIP. Still going strong, however, on Twitter, at FalcFans. And, of course, the host of this world-renowned Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, right here on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. And before we start today's episode, I want to let you guys know that you should be checking out the Locked On Today podcast. It's all the sports news that you need every morning in under 20 minutes. Subscribe to the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. So today's episode, guys, is our Trey Lance breakdown that was supposed to air yesterday, but we had to talk about Julio Jones on yesterday's episode and that trade talk. So go check that out with Charles McDonald if you missed it. But this is my conversation with Mark Schofield, the QB guru that we've had on the podcast several times over the last 6 months to talk about these various quarterbacks. And today we're talking about Trey Lance, the quarterback that some people think the Falcons would potentially prefer over a player like Ohio State's Justin Fields if the Falcons were to take a quarterback at the number four overall selection, a player that may be the apple of the 49ers' eye at the number three overall selection. And so we'll get into Mark and I's conversation about Trey Lance, and I'll come back at the end of today's episode to sort of summarize my thoughts on Trey Lance. So without further ado, let's sort of get into that conversation with Mark Schofield of Touchdown Wire at USA Today. So, guys, you are Locked On Falcons. Aaron Freeman, of course, once again here, joined by Mark Schofield, who we had on last week to talk about Justin Fields, the Ohio State quarterback, talking about his strengths, weaknesses, and maybe some player comparisons to some current NFL quarterbacks. And we're going to do the exact same thing that we did with Justin Fields, now with North Dakota State's Trey Lance, another quarterback that I think a lot of people think and believe that the Falcons have their eye on with that fourth overall selection. But Mark, my friend, welcome back to the show.
Aaron, it's great to be back with you, buddy. I'm excited to be here. Trey Lance is, I think, one of the more fascinating prospects in this entire class, both from the projection that's needed, you know, given the relative, you know, small amount of games that he's played, but also the ceiling that he offers and the athleticism and the dynamic arm talent that he has. And so he's one of the more enjoyable prospects I've had the pleasure of studying and thinking about, and excited to talk about him today.
Yeah, you talked about some of those physical tools and traits that Lance has, the arm talent, the ability as a runner. Are those sort of the standout things that, you know, for you from a trait standpoint that stand out when you watch him on the field?
Yeah, I mean, those are the ones that you're drawn to initially, Aaron. You see the easy arm talent. And I know, look, when you think about the four guys at the top, taking Mac Jones aside and talking about the other four, including Lance, all of them have tremendous arms, plus arms, like guys that you're not worried about from an arm talent perspective. But I think Lance might have the best of the four. I mean, it's just easy velocity. You can see the ball pop out of his hands well, and he's still figuring out the mechanical side of it, which I know we're going to touch on. But then you see the athleticism, the athletic ability, the fact that NDSU used him as a runner. You see his ability, his willingness to run through people, not just around them, and the power that he has behind him when he does that. Now, you know, it's a major league Willie Mays Hayes thing. It's like, that's great, kid. Don't ever do it again. Like, the guys in the NFL are going to light you up. But his willingness, his competitive toughness in those moments certainly stands out. But I don't want to overlook the mental side of it with him, because I know a lot of people are going to look at him and they're going to look at, oh, you know, he's FCS kid, like level of competition concerns, like they were the better team every Saturday, and so we didn't have to do a lot. They tasked him, his coaches at NDSU, with a ton of stuff at the line of scrimmage, from his first start to his last, reads, protections, getting out of plays, you know, kill calls, maybe calls, all that kind of stuff. The stuff they were asking Easton Stick and Carson Wentz to do, he was doing it as a redshirt freshman in his first start. And so will there be an adjustment for him to an NFL playbook? In some systems, yes. But in other systems, no. I think you could look at Kyle Shanahan's offense in San Francisco, and you see a lot of overlap between that system and what Lance was running at NDSU. And so, yeah, the arm talent, the athleticism, the athletic profile, that certainly jumps out. It's the easiest to look for first. But when you see what he was asked to do, you see the offense he was running, the things he was given the freedom to do with the line of scrimmage, that mental side of it is there as well. And I don't think people should overlook that.
Yeah. When people talk about Trey Lance, they often point out not only the physical traits, but those neck up abilities, the intelligence, the high football IQ. You pointed out some of those things. Now, from my perspective, you know, being able to figure out how smart, how intelligent a quarterback is can be difficult when you don't necessarily get the opportunity to talk to that quarterback. But you've watched a lot of quarterbacks over the years. You've seen some of those details. What are some of the things, you know, besides just sort of making those protection calls at the line of scrimmage, what are some of the things that you see on film that sort of testify to that sort of mental aspect that he's a little bit more advanced than maybe some people are giving him credit for?
I mean, there's a couple of things that you can see sort of on film. I do think that one of them is, you know, something you can see both on film and then in hearing his quarterback's coach, Rennie Hedberg, talk about him prior to Lance's first pro day. You know, if you watch that Butler game, his first start, you might see a 50-yard touchdown run, which really sort of put him on the map for a lot of people. You know, you had some anticipation throws early in that game, some coverage decisions that he made. He threw a post route off of play action that also sort of stood out. But that 50-yard touchdown run, that was a check that he made at the line of scrimmage. You know, Butler was showing a pressure look that he wanted to get them out of. He didn't like the play that was called because of it, so he checked to a run, and it's a 50-yard touchdown run. A lot of people have also said, look, the James Madison game, the national championship game, his first year as a starter, he ran the ball 30 times. You know, and people are saying, well, just how good is he if his team didn't trust him? No, those were similar checks that he made because of pressure looks. They had other plays called. They had passing plays called. And rather than run those against bad looks, he got them out of them into plays where they had a better opportunity to make a play because of the look that they were seeing. And yeah, he was checking into runs, but he was getting them out of bad passing situations. So that's also something that's important. And then you see the moments where he's working through reads. He's making throws into those sort of secondary windows against zone coverage looks where you might want to hit that first window, but it's taken away by a dropper, a rat, a robber or something. And so you have to reset your eyes and hit that second opportunity, that second window against zone coverage. That also shows you that mental side of it from Trey Lance as a prospect. And so there are moments on film where you can see him doing things that matter at the position, that matter at the next level. And these are some of the examples that I saw from him, and there are certainly others.
Okay. Now we got a good outline from Mark on some of Trey Lance's strengths. And like we did with Justin Fields previously, we'll get into maybe some of the question marks in terms of what Lance could potentially bring to the table for an NFL team at the next level. And we'll do that as we continue today's Locked On Falcons podcast. This episode of Locked On Falcons is brought to you by 1010, a capsule collection of diamond rings that are responsibly sourced, limited edition designs at fair price points. 1010 is an exclusive collection of 10 creative styles of diamond rings designed by 10 of the most distinctive designers working today. Rings sure to bring joy into her life. Using only diamonds responsibly sourced from Botswana, 10 female design masters have each produced a uniquely beautiful ring, ideal for engagement, Mother's Day, or simply a beautiful conversation piece. They're the perfect way to bring light into her life. They're available now through Mother's Day only at BlueNile.com. Just search the words 10 by 10. This collection features high quality fine jewelry that will surprise and delight, and fairly priced so you can give her something special and truly meaningful. I check these out myself, and I like that there are ones that are more classic and traditional, but also you have a good mix of modern elegant rings too. If you're on the hunt for the perfect unique ring that she'll treasure forever, you're definitely going to want to check this out. They won't be around for long, so find them now by searching the words 10 by 10 only at BlueNile.com. Hey, Falcon fans, listen up. Nugenix, the number one selling free testosterone booster at GNC, is now offering a complimentary bottle to all football fans in America. To get your complimentary bottle of Nugenix Total T, text DRAFT to 231231. This unique man-boosting formula is powered by Testofen, which helps boost free testosterone and total testosterone levels, increases energy and lean muscle mass. If you're over 40 or like me, approaching 40. Don't let age get in the way. Get your edge back with Nugenix. Plus, text now and they'll include a bottle of Nugenix Thermo, their most powerful fat incinerator ever, with key ingredients to help you get back in shape absolutely free. Text DRAFT to 231231. That's DRAFT to 231231. Message and data rates may apply. So Mark Schofield here talking with me about North Dakota State's Trey Lance. We talked about some of the positives. Let's get into some of those question marks, at least that I have about Trey Lance. And much has been made over the last several months about Justin Fields being a one-read guy. I think you, I, and so many other people have thoroughly debunked that. But I think what's interesting, at least from my perspective, is I tend to get a little bit more of that sense when I watch Trey Lance being more of a one-read guy. And what I mean by that is that he's a guy that will go through his progressions, and if necessarily the window isn't there, he'll sort of tuck it and run it. And obviously he has the skill set to do that. And given what you've talked about already on today's episode, that North Dakota State was, you know, an FCS powerhouse, they didn't necessarily need him to put the team on his back and try to, you know, force things that weren't necessarily there. They could essentially ask him to effectively manage the game, and not necessarily using that in the pejorative sense that it often is. But there were times when I watched him on film where I felt like he was a little too quick to run. And, you know, I'm not sure if he's going to be able to rely on that at the next level. There were times on film where he had that ability to extend plays with his legs, but I didn't necessarily see him maintain that eye level downfield that I would like to see, and being able to locate those open receivers with those second reaction plays. You know, is that a fair criticism in your eyes? Do you think that's a concern for him at the next level? Or do you just think some of that is based off of how he was coached at North Dakota State?
I mean, I think all of that's true. You know, it is a fair criticism. It's something he's going to have to work on at the next level. And I do think that there was an advantage of North Dakota State's offensive coaches, where they knew that he was one of the most talented players on the field every single Saturday. And that if he just didn't like what he saw, look, you could pick up 8, 10, 12 yards if you just pull it down and go, rather than like forcing a throw into coverage. And, you know, the numbers back that up, right? He threw one interception his entire collegiate career, and it came in his one showcase game against Central Arkansas. You don't go 28-0 TDIT if you're not taking care of the football. And for Lance, it was, I don't like this coverage look. I don't like this window. I don't like this route concept against this coverage. I'm going to talk it and go. I'm not going to force something. And that's a way to avoid interceptions. That won't always be there on Sundays. And so there will be moments when he'll have to sort of either throw the football away or force a throw into coverage that he might not have wanted to do, you know, when he was playing on Saturday. So it is a fair criticism. I do think it's a byproduct of his talent level. You know, sometimes when you see athletic quarterbacks, that athleticism can be a bit of a crutch. It's a, I don't like this look. I'm going to pull the football down because I know I can outrun guys. I know I can run over guys. That's not going to work at the next level. We know that. And so he'll have to sort of learn to stay and fight in the pocket, learn to work through some reads, learn to sort of take some risks, some, you know, educated guesses and risks with the football, some informed throws. And that's something I think he can do. You know, there are some other criticisms of him that I know we'll get into. This is one that I'm not as worried about. There are others that I'm a bit more hesitant over.
Now, I'm wondering if one of those things that you're hesitant over is the accuracy. And where do you think some of the erratic accuracy that he has stems from? Is it a mechanical issue? And if that's the case, you know, do you believe that's something that can be fixed or improved upon?
Yeah, it is a concern, the accuracy. And it is something that I do think merits a lot more examination. I think sort of the making plays, making reads, like we just talked about, that isn't as much of a concern as the accuracy, because I've always thought that, look, if you can't put the football where it needs to be, when it needs to be there, that's a problem that you're going to have to rectify. Because if you can't, the offense is going to struggle. I think it's a twofold situation with Lance. I think one is mechanical, Aaron. You're right, absolutely right about that. And I've long said that, look, mechanics don't matter until they matter. You know, I don't care if you're how you throw the footballs on, it's getting to where it needs to be. But there are moments when the ball's not there, and it is because of the mechanics. I think there's an arm slot inconsistency with him that he's working on. And if you watch his film and then see some of his pro day videos, the arm slot is much more consistent. So I know the work that he's done with Quincy Avery to date, that he continues to do with Quincy, who's such a great quarterback's coach, is working. And so I think that will improve the accuracy, both from a ball placement standpoint, just watching it on film, and the accuracy numbers. And I also think that there's part of a sort of feel it out process underway. This is a kid that only threw, you know, just over 100 passes in high school, 300 or so in college. Like, he hasn't thrown the ball a ton. And so you could see on film, there are moments where he's trying to figure out the right placement, given the coverage and given the leverage of defenders. There was a seam route throw he had, whether it was Central Arkansas or UC Davis, I forget, but it was one of those games, seam route off the left side where he's got his tight end open against a single high. And he wants to put it in a spot to protect his guy. So he tries to sort of put it on the back shoulder, and it's a miss because it's wide open. But you can see the thought process on film where he's worried about that free safety lurking in the middle of the field. He doesn't want to get his guy blown up, doesn't want to lead him upfield or even towards the middle of the field closer to that defender. So he tries to protect him and misses on the throw, and it goes down as an incompletion, and it's charted as an inaccurate throw. But you can see the process of work. He's trying to get a feel for that route, that concept, that coverage, and that throw. And so I think those are the two areas, sort of the feel for some of these routes and concepts, as well as the consistency or inconsistency with that arm slot, that are the things that he's going to work on and get better at. So I do think it's something he can overcome, but it's certainly something to watch going forward.
Now, you talk about that lack of a feel and the lack of, you know, simple, you know, reps. Do you think that is the root of the narrative that seems to be around Trey Lance, that he is the guy that needs to sit a year? We've touched upon this before on the podcast in terms of his pro readiness, but what do you say to those question marks?
You know, I do think that plus the questions about the more complex rotations he'll face from defenses. He didn't see a ton of rotations, you know, real complex stuff. It was all pretty basic stuff that he was seeing. Central Arkansas did get him a couple of times, particularly in that one interception where he just didn't see the rotation at all. And so that's, you know, in addition to those reps and the ball placement in the field, you know, seeing those more complex rotations are reasons why he might want to be brought along a bit slower. But I do think he's more ready than people give him credit for. You know, a lot of the mental stuff that we've talked about, I do think that he's ready to take on stuff and take some stuff on early in his career. And to be fair and frank, there's no real way to replicate that stuff, right? If you're going to need to get a feel for throwing some routes and a feel to sort of decipher rotations, there's no better way to do it than doing it. You know, sometimes holding a clipboard isn't going to give you the opportunity to get that feel for those route combinations or how to read those rotations, because you're seeing it from a different angle. You know, it's one thing to see their safeties from the sideline. It's another thing to see them from under center or the pistol or the shotgun. And so he's going to have to play. Like, there's no better teacher than doing it in the moment. So he's going to have to play and play early to learn this stuff. You know, and if it were me, I'd start him as soon as humanly possible, you know, get him in there. Now, you might have to sit him down at times. You might have to sort of say, look, you know, you've thrown three picks. You're hurting yourself here. Like, we're not going to keep running you out there. Catch your breath. We'll see you next week. Like, let's go back and get after it then. So he's going to have to be handled the right way. But I don't think the idea that you can now just draft a quarterback and sit him for 3 years, you've got to get him on the field. I used to be a bigger believer in the sort of sit and learn. I think now with the way the game is trending and the willingness of offensive coaches to say, we've drafted you, let's go get stuff from your college playbook, your high school playbook, we'll get it installed and you can run it and run stuff you're familiar with. You got to get these guys on the field.
Okay. And now that we've talked about Trey Lance's strengths and weaknesses, I want to get into, you know, some player comparisons, talk about his floor and ceiling on today's Locked On Falcons podcast here with Mark Schofield. But before we get there, guys, I want to let you know that BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season is in full swing, and you can track all the action at BetOnline. This week has tons of sports action on the go as the NFL draft is on and the Kentucky Derby is back as the first leg of the Triple Crown begins this weekend. Get all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including MLB, NBA, NHL, and all your UFC and MMA action. Before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs. Head over to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today at betonline.ag. Use the promo code LOCKEDON to receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Now, this is a big week, not only because the draft is here, but I got my brand new order of coconut brownie chunk Built Bars yesterday. If you don't know about Built Bar, they're the best tasting protein bar out there on the market. Built Bars are covered in 100% real chocolate, so they taste just like a candy bar. They come in great flavors like peanut butter, caramel brownie, cookies and cream, and so much more. And of course, they have the champion coconut brownie chunk, the flavor that was voted the best flavor in the Built Bar March Madness bracket last month. And Built Bars, they're not just tasty, they're healthy too. They're low in sugar and calories, high in protein and fiber. I like to use them as low-calorie meal replacements for breakfast and lunch, but I have to promise myself that I'm only going to limit myself to two per day, and that's so hard to do. That's how good they are. Check them out for yourself by heading over to BuiltBar.com. Use the promo code LOCKED15, and you'll get 15% off your next order. That's promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off your next order at BuiltBar.com. So, Mark, to wrap up today's episode, we talked about this with Justin Fields previously, but maybe where are some NFL comparisons for guys that you look at currently in the league or in previously in the league that you think Trey Lance compares to? And a similar question in terms of what do you see his floor as a starter in the NFL and what do you see his ceiling potentially be?
Lance does seem like he's one of the more boom bust guys in this class. I mean, when you sort of look at a floor for him, it might be sort of a Mariota type floor where the athleticism is always going to be enough where you can do some things with him, but the inconsistency with the accuracy, the inconsistency with arm slot, the, you know, sometimes the decisions that probably should have been made quicker. You could see a scenario where he's going to have to really be carried by players around him and scheme. So Mariota might be his floor, but his ceiling is another Titan. That's Steve McNair. I mean, there are a lot of people, Matt Waldman, Doug Farrar, and others that have made the McNair comparison. And anytime you compare somebody to one of the greats, you know, I tend to hesitate to do that. But I could see why people make the McNair comparison, the toughness and the power as a runner, the throw in motion, even with the adjusted arm slot, is very similar to McNair. You could see that sort of from a mechanical standpoint. And, you know, I think you watch some of McNair's games, even dating back to Alcorn State, and you could certainly see Trey Lance now. And so I think in the right environment, and I think Atlanta would be one environment where this could work, you could get Steve McNair. You could get sort of vintage Steve McNair with this pick. It might take some time. There might be some rough spots. There might be some moments like I just talked about where he's going to throw three picks in the first half and you're going to think, we're going to sit this kid down. Like, you know, we got to handle him the right way. We don't want to break him. Like, you're going to have to sit him down, work with him a bit. There will be some rough spots. But I think if handled the right way, this could be Steve McNair 2.0.
Yeah. Yeah, Lance is an interesting evaluation from my perspective because you talk about the boom bust aspect of it. And, you know, obviously my job is not on the line when it comes to evaluating these quarterbacks.
That's just it, man. We're not getting fired if it goes wrong, man, but people in the room will be.
Yeah. So I tend to be, you know, putting myself in those evaluator shoes, I tend to be a little bit more hesitant on some of these guys. Cam Newton was a guy that I thought was a boom bust guy coming out. And I was like, I don't know if I want to attach my job to Cam Newton. And obviously Cam's had a successful career and certainly compared to some of those other quarterbacks taken that year, much better career than those guys. But it's one of those things where, you know, I'm not quite as high on him, but I certainly, because you talk about that potential is there, that if you do your due diligence and you put him in the right environment, and in Atlanta, as you mentioned, maybe one of those places, you know, the ceiling is potentially sky high for them. So I will be definitely intrigued to see where the Falcons sort of fall on this quarterback evaluation, whether it's Justin Fields, whether it's Trey Lance. Very curious to where the 49ers fall on this quarterback evaluation with those guys, along with Mac Jones in the conversation. So, you know, we'll be looking back at these quarterbacks in this draft class, potentially as a historic class. And, you know, that 99 class, you know, it's Donovan McNabb and was that Culpepper's year as well, or was he the next year?
I think he was the next year. I think it was McNabb and Couch and
Akili Smith and Cade McNown, right?
I think so. I'm trying to pull it up right now. Couch. Yeah. So you had Couch, McNabb, Akili Smith, Cade McNown, and Dante. It was Culpepper at 11.
Okay.
Yeah. So five in the top 12. I think we do top that. I think we get five in the top 10 this year. Now, which guy ends up being the McNabb and which guy the Akili Smith? I mean, that's the big question here. I do think, and we always say this, right? It ends up what I yap about on a show or write about in an article doesn't matter. What matters is the scheme fit and the developmental structure put around these players, because ultimately that's what it comes down to. Will the organizations that draft these five quarterbacks do the right things around them or not? You look at Sam Darnold as perhaps a test case for that, because the Jets draft him, and a lot of people thought Darnold was QB1 in that class. A lot of people were looking at – I remember the combine of the Mahomes-Watson draft class when all anybody wanted to talk about was Sam Darnold the next year. That's all anybody wanted to talk about was how great Sam Darnold was going to be. Meanwhile, you had Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes staring you in the face. The Jets didn't do enough around him from a scheme fit, support structure, roster construction standpoint to put him in a position to be successful, as good of a prospect as he was. And so that's going to be the key. Will the teams that draft these guys do it the right way, put stuff around? Will the Jets do that with Zach Wilson at 2? Will the 49ers do that with whether it's Jones, Lance, or Fields at 3, and on and down the line? And so that's ultimately what's going to determine what will determine whether these guys are booms or busts, because they're all good prospects who have NFL futures, bright ones at that. But will the teams do right by them? That's ultimately what will matter more than anything else that I say on a show.
Yeah. And Mark, we could do a whole separate podcast about sort of teams and environment and stability. And I will say, just for the Falcons' sake, I do think this year represents a unique opportunity, because so much when you look at some of these quarterbacks that, you know, succeed and fail, it's going to a stable organization where they learn one offense and they can stick in that offense and they put playmakers around them and they don't put too much on their plate to have to sort of carry the team early on in their career. You see that with Matt Ryan coming to Atlanta back in 2008, with Mike Smith coming in there, with Mike Mularkey's offense there, basically asking him, hey, you know, hand the ball off to Michael Turner, and then on 3rd and 2, find Roddy White, and then find Tony Gonzalez. And that was a situation that Matt Ryan was able to grow into and blossom into. And I think a real reason why he was able to turn into a successful player at this level. And I think now here in Atlanta in 2021 with Arthur Smith, you know he's going to be calling plays. You know, presumably, unless something goes horribly awry, he's probably going to be the coach here for the next 2 or 3 years. So you get a stable environment there. You obviously know the Falcons have some playmakers on that offensive side of the ball. So it's a situation in Atlanta, I think, in unique circumstances where it makes a ton of sense for them to take a quarterback, but it really just boils down to how they look at these players. If they see these guys as, you know, look, we're not as high on Trey Lance. We're on the more the boom side or the bust side with Trey Lance rather than the boom side, then it's hard to justify taking that big swing if you don't necessarily have to. So,
yeah. And especially in Atlanta's position, and I know you've been the conductor of the Kyle Pitts at 4 train, and it does make a lot of sense. Like, if your top 3 quarterbacks in Atlanta's draft room are Lawrence, Wilson, and we'll say Fields, and those are the guys that go 1, 2, 3, do you really take QB4 or QB5 on your board, whatever, over the perhaps the best non-quarterback in this entire draft class and a guy that you know can make you a great team now and down the road? You know, it's tough to pass on. But at the same time, you don't want to be picking 4 again, right? And so a good way to ensure you're not is to get that quarterback now, even if you don't have to play him right away, which is in a window toward the trade Lance decision where you can take your time with him. You can sort of develop him and make it run with, you know, around Matt Ryan and the pieces you have now. And then when it's time to move on from Ryan and his contract, you've got the guy. You don't have to chase the quarterback ghost 2 or 3 years now. So Atlanta's in a fascinating position. I mean, I'm excited from, you know, miles away to see what they do. And I, again, North Dakota, I mean, Rhode Island, Maine, the Maine shore is lovely, particularly late summer, August on the Maine shore. It's a very nice part of the country, friends. So whatever the Atlanta Falcons want, so we can come up the New England Patriots and draft a quarterback at 4, we'll throw it in. Heck, you could throw in my podcast too. I know nobody listens to it, but I'll step aside from podcasts and if that's what's going to be what moves the needle here, because, you know, as I've said before, Aaron, Fields, Lance, all these guys, I'm very high on them. And if one of them can find their way to New England, I'd be very happy.
Yeah, well, I know some Falcon fans that would happily trade Locked On Falcons for another podcast. but yeah, it's, you know, it's just going to be interesting to see what the Falcons do, because I think they're in a unique position where you look at Tom Brady getting up there in years, you have the question mark concerns in Carolina and New Orleans at the quarterback position. And, you know, the potential to hit that grand slam, the bases are loaded for the Falcons. And you, look, you can double and drive two runs in, but yep, you could also swing away and hit that grand slam. And you can potentially own this division for the next decade, or at least be ahead of the curve while the rest of the division is catching up to you. So it's a fascinating decision. I will not begrudge the Falcons whichever direction they will go in that regard. Sticking with Matt Ryan and putting Kyle Pitts on that team is a relatively safe choice compared to the quarterback, where it is a big swing and there's a potential that you could wind up striking out there. But yeah, it's an exciting
time. I almost feel like there's almost not a wrong move. Like, I mean, I guess technically, yeah, if you draft a running back at four, that might be a wrong move. But whether it's Pitts, whether it's one of these quarterbacks, whether you do trade down, because trading down a couple of spots, you still might get a very good to great to elite type of player if you slide back to, say, where Denver is at nine, and then you add a couple of future first rounders, then, okay, when you need to go get the next quarterback, you've got the draft capital to do that, to make that easier, to get back up to, say, four. And so, you know, absent drafted a kicker at four, it's almost like I don't know if Atlanta can really go wrong in terms of the decision. Now, if it's a quarterback, then you have to do the developmental piece the right way. So that could make it a wrong pick down the road. But I think in terms of the decision in the moment, it's almost like Atlanta, like you said, Aaron, they're really holding all the cards in this draft. And that's why everybody says the draft probably starts at four.
Yeah. Well, Mark, again, we could talk about this all day, and I'm sure we will have plenty of conversations about this offline when it comes to what the Falcons wind up doing and what the Patriots wind up doing. Yeah. I'm very fascinated to see if Bill Belichick throws a curveball in this upcoming draft. It seems like things are setting up that way, but we'll see how big a drop on that curveball he winds up putting there. How much
he's going to trade out again. And oh, I'm already angry over it, man. He's going to trade out. I just know it.
All right. You sound like me, setting your expectations low.
You got to set them low, man. I mean, if the past year has taught us anything, it's just set the expectations incredibly low, because then you won't be disappointed.
Yeah, that's the life I've been living as a Falcon fan for 30 years. But Mark, let the people know where they can find your stuff and get more information on these quarterbacks, as well as what else you have coming this week, now that we're only a couple of days away from this 2021 NFL draft.
Yeah, just a couple of days away. As you can see for those watching on News Channel 8, the gray hairs and the beard, we're getting closer and closer, and they come out more and more. You can follow me on Twitter on the Bird app at Mark Schofield, USA Today's Touchdown Wire. Last week did a piece on custom plays for all the top five quarterbacks. We got, you know, comparisons for the top 50 that Doug Farrar and I did. As we're getting closer, we're going to do some mock draft stuff, some grading, some live stuff, and just try to get through the next couple of days so Aaron can have me on. We can start yelling about Spencer Rattler and Sam Howell here in like 72 hours or so.
Yeah. If the Falcons pass on a quarterback, that conversation is
going Friday
to
morning
start,
show, right?
Yeah, that's going to start much earlier than I am emotionally and psychologically prepared to have that conversation. But Mark,
we're also scarred and broken, man.
Mark, man, I really do appreciate you coming on and talking quarterbacks with you. And I look forward to the next time we talk quarterbacks. Hopefully, if the Falcons get this pick right, if they go in that direction, it will be a decade from now. We can talk about how, you know, they nailed that pick or whatever the case may be.
I look forward to the decade anniversary revisiting this pick, man. I do look forward to that. But Aaron, it's always a blast catching up with you, buddy. Take care.
All right, Mark, man. Really appreciate it, man.
Of course, buddy. Anytime. You know where to find me.
Yeah. All right, guys, there's Mark Schofield, Touchdown Wire at USA Today. And before I get into my final thoughts on Trey Lance, I want to let you guys know that tomorrow the Locked On Podcast Network is partnering with the Draft Network to cover the NFL Draft live. Get insight and analysis from all the local Locked On experts, including myself, as well as the Draft Network's national experts. Subscribe to the Locked On NFL YouTube page to watch the 3-day live coverage beginning tomorrow on Thursday, April 29th. So Trey Lance, the player that kind of reminded me a little bit of Trey Lance, just because of some of the question marks with the accuracy and being a little erratic there, watching him, you know, I was reminded a little bit of Lamar Jackson. But the main difference is that I don't think Lance is nearly as gifted a runner as Jackson was. I think athletically, Lance is more on that sort of Dak Prescott level as a runner. And that's kind of the type of player that I kind of see Lance growing into, a guy like Dak Prescott that can be a top 10 quarterback, certainly a guy that you can win with, be a perennial playoff contender with. But I just think kind of a less accurate and maybe a less consistent, if he can improve their version of Dak Prescott. And, you know, at least early on, you know, hopefully he can improve his mechanics and get better there. But that's not a guy that I'm going to be as in love with as a prospect as other potential candidates, but that's a guy I certainly do like. Obviously, I do think in terms of the narrative about his need to sit, as others have opined, you know, any quarterback would benefit from sitting a year before being thrown to the wolves. But, you know, I don't necessarily buy into the narrative that, you know, Trey Lance needs to sit more so than some of these other guys, because I think he ran a very pro style offense, ran it at a very high level, and, you know, could do the same in the pros pretty early on in his career, running an offense like the Shanahan Arthur Smith offense that features a lot of play action, bootlegs, all those various things. Now, his lack of experience, I think 318 career passing attempts, if I recall correctly, you know, as far as I know, would be fairly unprecedented for a guy with that relatively small amount of reps at the collegiate level, coming in and starting immediately in NFL and having a high degree of success. So I get why maybe people feel a little bit of caution with sort of throwing him to the wolves over some other guys that, you know, have thrown over 1,000 passes or whatever at the collegiate level. But you know, I think it just kind of depends on what system he goes to. Like, if New England were to draft Trey Lance, yeah, I think he would probably benefit more from sitting a year, because they're going to play him in a much different system than what he's used to at North Dakota State. But if San Francisco or Atlanta were to draft him, you know, I think he would be fine if he was forced to start. You know, a good coach is not going to necessarily ask him to go out there and, you know, in his first few starts, throw the ball 45 times and expect his team to win football games. They're obviously going to lean heavily on the running game in order to maximize his skill set. And I think maybe one of the differences between Trey Lance and at least the guys I think are ahead of him in this draft class, and Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence, I think there's the potential that further down the line, because of the inconsistency as a passer, you know, Trey Lance may be one of those quarterbacks that would greatly benefit from having a strong running game and playing in an offense that has, you know, in the case of like a Dak Prescott, a Zeke Elliott, and that type of player to lean on, rather than being that sort of Matt Ryan type of quarterback that, you know, obviously Matt Ryan wasn't this early in his career, but, you know, by the time he hit his prime, like, you didn't really need a running game and Matt Ryan could go out there and win you football games. And I don't know if Trey Lance is going to be that type of quarterback, but we'll see. We'll see. He certainly has a lot of potential, but, you know, he's clearly QB3 in my eyes. I think he's better than Zach Wilson. I think he's better than Mac Jones, but I don't think the gap between him and those guys is as significant as at least I perceive the gap between him and Justin Fields, who I think is the next best quarterback in this draft class. So, there's my thoughts on Trey Lance. If he's the pick, you know, I wouldn't be upset by it. He wouldn't be my preferred pick between him and Justin Fields. But if he was the pick over someone like a Kyle Pitts, I would certainly get it. So that's all I have to say about Trey Lance. And tomorrow we will get into, I guess, my final thoughts on what the Falcons could or should do in this draft, and why I still think it's going to be Justin Fields, why I think it makes sense for them to draft Justin Fields. But I will do my best to make one final case for Kyle Pitts, given that, you know, a lot of the buzz seems to still be pointing in his direction as the Falcons pick. But, you know me, I tend to be skeptical of some of the quote unquote inside information that you're hearing this time of year, because, you know, that was saying a year ago that the Falcons were trying to trade up and they wound up staying put at 16 and taking the player that I thought they would take at 16. In AJ Terrell. So call it cockiness or overconfidence or whatever, you know, Aaron, you get one thing right and then all of a sudden you think you know, you're clairvoyant that can always predict the draft. But I just still have that gut feeling that Justin Fields is going to be the pick, but we'll see. We'll see. And we'll talk about all that on tomorrow's episode, guys. Appreciate you for tuning in. We got one more Lockdown Falcons before we know who this pick is going to be. And 6 months of speculation at this point in time will have finally come to an end, and we can move forward to 6 months of hyping up a guy and talking about how incredible the Falcons are going to be once whoever they wind up drafting gets on the field. In the case of Kyle Pitts, maybe it won't be 6 months, but in the case of a quarterback, it probably will be more than 6 months. But we'll just have to see how that goes. And, you know, we still got you're going to get a Locked On Falcons every day from here until Friday, May 7th. Yeah. So we got, I don't know, I can't do the math in my head, 10 days of shows or something like that. 9 days of shows left, consecutive shows. So look forward to it, guys. Appreciate you tuning in. Until then.